Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
We got Mary Hawkins going to read Psalms 24 number Psalm going into the new year. Get ready for Mary to read that to bring you into the new horizon for 2024. New things happening. Mary, Psalms, the 24 Psalms. Are you ready?
What'd you say? What?
We have another read, the 24 number Psalm. Mary Hawkins from Detroit is going to read the 24 number Psalm. And I know she said, Mary? I don't know if she's getting that together. But the reading coming from the 24th number of Psalms this morning.
I got it.
Okay.
The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. For he hath founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who shall stand in his holy place? He that had clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitful. He shall receive a blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of them that seek him, that seek thy face, O Jacob, Selah. Lift up your head, O you gates, and be ye lifted up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Amen.
Who is the King of glory, strong and mighty? Thank you for that, Mary. Okay. Mary, I want to ask you, what you looking for in 2024? What you looking for? What you asking God for?
Some better help, a new house. And to be closer with my family.
Okay. I just want to know if those that want, this is the last day of 2023, 2024 rising for me, and it should be a breakthrough in your life. And I just want you to know better things going to happen for 2024. I was a little shocked finding out that
you're going in and out. Your voice going in and out.
Okay, let me play a little music.
Thank you. I'm take the time out and say he got the whole wide world in his hands.
And I want to tell you, whoever wants to support the black agenda, I'll vote for.
I don't see none or the other. Anytime you spend $1 million listening
over to Israel where they fight to kill the babies. You send money in the plane where they fight. What about peace? Dr. King promoted peace. God got the whole world in his hands.
Who's going to free the political prisoners that's in jail for years and years?
What Jeff Ford doing in jail for years and years? Larry Hoover in jail for years and years. Brother Harris in jail for years and years.
Brother Cumberland in jail for years and years.
I'm telling you, whoever will vote for reparations, whoever will vote to get these brothers out, I'm going to support Donald Trump.
Donald Trump ain't got no million dollars to kill the babies. He ain't got no money to Ukraine. He kill babies. I don't know what's going on.
I want to say black folks. Wake up.
Because if he gets in office, he's going to send all these people back to their home state. That's what you need to do.
The city is packed with money.
People are sick, scabies, and bringing these sick folks over here. And the other administration said nothing about it.
Yeah, I will support Donald Trump.
Put that in your pipe. And I don't care what you think about it.
He's got the whole world.
Big one. of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
Dr. King says money has to be passed out to everybody.
What you doing to tax your money to train?
What you doing to tax your money
owed to Israel? They killing babies, bombing houses. And the man that got them is a crazy man.
He ain't going to stop the walk. He needs to stop the killing. The master that's going on.
Dr. King. The more country of America.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power. Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, Today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
People let me tell you.
keep doors open for you in spite of what you think God will do it for you. I'm concerned about you. Everything is in the ground. For a divine blessing that God gonna do it for you. And some of you saying, well, Bishop, how can that be? God is able to open up doors. I want to say, stop the war over in Israel. Stop the war in Ukraine. Let's talk about peace. Let's talk about love. Let's talk about feeding hungry. Let's send those people back where they come from. And I think that's the most important thing. We have to rise up. We marched in the 60s. We marched in the 70s. We marched for equal housing. We marched for everything. But we didn't march for our money. Extra money all over the world. And people at home that fought in Vietnam and Korea didn't get no help. So we didn't sign up for that.
The hand of the Lord was upon me and carried me out in the spirit of the Lord and set me down in the midst of the valley which was full of bones.
Yes.
And caused me to pass by them round about. And behold, there were very many in the open valley, and lo, they were very dry. And he said unto me, Son of man, can these bones live? And I answered, O Lord God, thou knowest. And again he said unto me, prophesy from these bones.
In the valley of the dry bones. So we are operating in a valley. That's what we're operating in now. And we got to open up the door where we don't move in that way. Going into the new year, get ready for a blessing. 2024. Reading, Mary, in the valley of the dry bones. And in the valley, God can call it out. So the night, this evening, I'm saying, stop the killing, save the babies. I'm saying, stop the war. Stop the war. Stop spending all the money and just do some healing of people.
The hand of the Lord was upon me and carried me out in the spirit of the Lord and set me down in the midst of the valley which was full of bones.
Yes.
And caused me to pass by them round about. And behold, there were very many in the open valley, and lo, they were very dry. And he said unto me, Son of man, can these bones live? And I answered, O Lord God, thou knowest. And again he said unto me, prophesy from these bones, and say unto them, O ye dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. The prophet and the valley of dry bones. among those who were carried away was a young man by the name of Ezekiel, who had obviously been trained to be a priest. When we study his minute descriptions of the temple order and of the temple liturgy, when we read of his intimate knowledge of things directly or indirectly concerned with Judaism, we must conclude that he had formal training as a priest. But along with the vision that Ezekiel reveals here, along with others that he records in his book, one thing he wanted to convince Israel of, that her God had not fallen, and her God was not dead. He wanted Israel to understand that her God, as he depicts in the vision where he saw the vague outline of a man sitting upon a chariot throne, engulfed in a cloud, and with priestly functionaries going in and coming out from the mercy seat. He was saying, when he told them about wheels that he saw in the middle of wheels, and that these wheels were guarded by angels, and that these wheels had eyes, and that these wheels did not deviate from their course. He was telling Israel first about the overruling providence and power of God, and about Israel was a part of God's eternal plans and purposes. While Israel was one wheel, ever moving, and above that was another wheel, that was the Babylonian wheel. It was moving. And that above that was another wheel, which was God's universal wheel, and God's universal plan. And all of these wheels were moving, because all of God's plans are always moving. Maybe you think you have stopped him. Maybe you think you have blocked him. Maybe you can't see the movement. But God's plans never stand still. You can't bother them and you can't stop them. For the writer here tells us that angels were with God. Father, may we please. So, to Israel, we see in this vision, Babylon was a desolate place. Babylon represented a valley to Israel, a valley of depravity, a valley of disfranchisement, a valley of hopelessness, a valley of dry bones, a valley of lifelessness. In one of the great cities of the ancient time, Babylon to Israel was a valley. Someone might marvel, if Babylon was a great city, how could it be regarded by the Israelites as a valley? Well, you see, a city may be one thing to one people, or a country may mean one thing to one people, and altogether another thing to another people. When the white Europeans came to this country, embarked upon these shores, America to them was a land of promise, was a mountaintop of possibility, was a mountaintop of adventure. But to the Negro, when he embarked upon these shores, America to him was a valley. A valley of slavehood. A valley of slavery and oppression. A valley of sorrow. So that often we have to say, will it be a day? I'm going to eat at the feast and pray. One of these days, the chariot of God to swing low. I wish I had somebody here praying with me. So that Babylon to Israel from a place of hopelessness. It was a valley of dry bones. A valley of dry bones. Well, the prophet tells us, and considering a prophet, what is a prophet anyway? Since the prophet was God's representative, God's ambassador, God's watchman there in Babylon. You know, and the word prophet can be interchanged with the word preacher. For a prophet is a preacher. And a preacher ought to be a prophet. Not a prophet such as we are told and talk about sometimes. Not a funny person. Not somebody with their head tied up or selling luck or anything like that. Not that kind of prophet. But I mean a real prophet. A prophet called of God. A prophet born of God. A prophet sent from God. A prophet inspired of God. A prophet is one who knows the past, who understands the present, and out of his knowledge of the past and his insight of the present, he's able to predict the future. A prophet is one who has sight, insight, and foresight. With sight, he looks on things. With insight, he looks into things. With foresight, he looks beyond things. Such a man was Ezekiel. And he uses the symbol of a valley to describe Israel's Babylonian situation. The symbol of a valley. When you see a valley, that's a low place between mountains. And to Israel, there were obstructing mountains surrounding her. Her situation in Babylon. Economic mountain. Social and political mountain. Religious mountain. Encircled and enclosed her in. And she was down there in the stagnant air of a valley in Babylon. So that he said that he was in the spirit. And that gives validity to it, you know. People speak a little bit about the spirit now. But I'm afraid that the church is losing a great deal of its spiritual consciousness. It wasn't unusual for folk to say when I was growing up as a boy, the spirit told me to do certain things. Or I was led by the spirit to do certain things. So that this prophet was a spiritual mind, a spirit-filled, God-conscious prophet. And he said, why being in the spirit, the Lord led him out to the valley. And then he led him to the midst of the valley and sat him down in the midst of it. But he was really saying that God led him to the heart of Israel's problem.
Yes.
And Israel's situation.
Yes.
In battle.
Yes.
That's what he was saying.
Yes.
God
time,
took him in a thought-doing survey.
Yes.
In a thought-doing analysis.
Yes.
And understanding of Israel's Babylonian situation. And when the Lord had led him to the heart of Israel's problem, set him down there, then for fear, but way out on the periphery of things, he missed something. Then the Lord led him round and about for that, or took him and encompassed for that, circled it on all sides, that he might not miss the remotest problem of Israel situation. And when the survey was far and complete, the Lord poured the question to him. Son of man, son of man, I wish you could hear me. Can these bones live? That son of man seemed to be reminiscent of man's limitation. Reminiscent of man's finiteness. Man's humanity. Son of man. Son of man, you are a scholar. You are an educator. Son of man, you are a scientist. Can these bones live? Son of man, you are an engineer. Can these bones live? Son of man, you are a heart specialist. Son of man, you are a geologist. You are a botanist. You are a specialist in various stages of the human body. You are a psychologist and psychiatrist. You know all about drives and reactions and responses and tendencies. Know that all of this knowledge, can you tell me, can these bones live? Can these bones live? Son of man, you found pathways in the air. You have circumvented the earth. Son of man, you found highways upon the sea. And you made your own highways under the sea. Can these bones live? Live. Of life. Oh, we know a lot of things. We know what the human problems are. We know men are mean. We know men are prejudiced. We know that men are narrow-minded. And we know they are selfish. We know men are unkind, ruthless, and cruel. We know men are murderers and sinful. But what we don't know is what to do about it. Well, we know what the problem is. We've made an analysis of it. We've already diagnosed the case. But what we can't do is write a prescription.
I wish I had somebody here praying with me.
So that the prophet had to say, Lord, thou knowest. Lord, thou knowest. When it comes to the answer of many of life's perplexing problems, when it comes to a solution to these problems, Lord, thou knowest. I submit myself before you. Limited, finite, ignorant and helpless, like dry bones in a valley. And thou knowest. Thou hast the answer. And you know that one thing about God. When we go to Him sincerely, when we've been overwhelmed by some problem that we aren't able to grapple with, put it at His feet. Ultimately, if we have faith, He'll give us the answer. He'll work it out for us. And Ezekiel declared that he didn't know. And it was in the hands of God to give the answer. Why, the Lord, after Ezekiel had surveyed and had gotten a full understanding of what the Babylonian problem was, he said to him, why, you go out if you want the answer and preach to those dry bones. The Lord, it looks like a helpless thing. It looks like an unprofitable thing for me to go out and preach to dry bones. Some of the living soul that I preach to don't respond to me. And what could I expect from dry bones? But the Lord has been to go on out and preach anyhow. You know, God's ways, you know, are above man's ways. And you can't always understand why He orders you to do certain things. But if the Lord orders you, go on anyhow. Why, you may not see it, but there is a way. You may not know what you're doing, but God has it worked out. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Oh, Lord. And I saw that man go out in that valley. In that valley of dry bones. Of dry bones. Oh, Lord. And stood there. And preached to those dry bones. The Lord had given him a text to preach on. Well, Lord, what can I preach to dry bones about? Oh, Lord. Lord, what kind of subject? Tell those dry bones.
Where do I go when there's nobody else to turn to? Who do I talk to when
And